Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Everyone, to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 102. My name is Marcel. I'm here with my favorite hosts. I believe we got all three of them. So which one is my favorite? Do you guys know?
I'm your favorite.
That's actually true. I really don't have no favorite. Jason and Corbin, they just argue and bicker too much. Ryan, you're just too cool. You know.
No, it's just, I mean, you just crossed those two off and I'm the only one left is the reality of it.
Yes, I'm sorry, we just fired Jason and Ryan. I mean, Jason and Corbin, they have been fired from the cast.
No, that's adults. Fine, that's fine. Corbin can be your favorite now. You fired me. Done here.
Yeah, those Michigan guys. So what about you guys? How are you guys doing?
Are they here?
No, we've been fired.
Oh, I was still muted from, I said one sentence, and whoops.
Oh, that's it. No, this is it. We're going. This is
all
the
right.
Podcast.
We're
people
in
need
it.
To know our struggle. People need to know our struggle.
The struggle is real.
We can't
some days
do it.
You just forget to unmute yourself.
We just don't have it anymore.
At least you haven't fallen asleep on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, did you really fall asleep, or were you just digging around on that one?
He fell asleep.
That was the night where, like, you guys messaged me, like, we were like, we need to push it back a little bit. And I was just beat. Like, I was half asleep when we started, and then I laid down in my bed because that's where I was podcasting, and I was out, done. Deuces. I woke up like 2 hours later. Yeah. Like, woke up 2 hours later, drooled all over my phone. It was a mess. Like. Yeah, I had to go clean myself off after that. It was bad. I was definitely beat.
Oh man, if you guys don't know what we're talking about, episode 100, we got a clip in there where Ryan falls asleep on the cast and you can hear him snoring. So you got to check it out. It's all the lulls. Got to get it all in. Yeah, we got some good feedback on that cast actually.
Yeah, people seem to like it. We put a lot of work into it, so I'm glad it came across pretty well. It was fun to go back and listen to because I don't normally listen to these, but I did enjoy listening to that one.
Yeah, it was a way to tell everybody you don't listen to your podcast.
I'm here for the podcast. I listen to it in real time.
Oh, it's way different when you listen to it edited.
I don't go back and read my articles. I don't reread my stories.
I don't think you proofread your articles.
I'm perfect the first time. What are you talking about?
See, I definitely go back and read my articles because they're a different article when I go read them after they've got edited.
My stuff does not get edited because my stuff usually looks pretty good. Something about being a writer.
On your own. I actually have an edit.
Something about being a writer all the time makes it hard to not be able to write.
You write a sports column in Oklahoma about high school volleyball. Like,
that's not like super true.
It's not okay. Not true.
Wait. Define not super true. I don't get this.
I mean, okay, Ryan says a column on high school volleyball. I've never written a column on high school volleyball. I have written a story about high school volleyball, but I think that's literally one day in the past 3.5 years.
A column implies he writes daily updates about high school volleyball, which would be really boring 8 months a year when you're talking about the new draft class.
You guys don't know what columns mean. Columns mean that you are like inserting personal opinion, whereas a story just means you're going with facts and things other people have said.
This is really interesting.
Well, you guys brought it up. Not my fault.
We wish we hadn't. We wish we hadn't invited you to be on the podcast.
You probably shouldn't have bit off this conversation if you weren't ready for it.
I didn't even try.
You did.
I'm sorry.
You did.
I'm apologizing now.
All right. let's go on and talk. No.
This is great.
Yeah, it's perfect. This is gold.
All right. Let's move on from the high school volleyball and the high school football and all of that fun stuff I do. And let's talk Finance 101.
Wow, that's the best segue ever. Oh, man. I got to quit. I just want to retire right now.
It wasn't a segue. It was just a – we're definitely
exactly. Not – the best segues are the ones you don't even know are segues at all.
Yep. That one was – it was pretty good.
That was seamless.
Yeah, I was wondering where you're coming from and how you're going to put it together, and just made all sense at the end, Corbin.
Just, it's not a segue. It's just a segue.
Speaking of high school volleyball, let's not talk about high school volleyball. Boom, segue.
So we're going to jump into a Finance 101. We're going to start talking about shipping your cards. So I got a little story. This week I bought one of the very few paper cards I ever will buy in my life. And I got one sent to me from this store. I'm not going to name no names. So I bought a card one of the few times I'm ever going to buy a paper card because I just don't play paper. And so I got one shipped, got in the mail. I bought a few cards, and they all came in. They were all pretty good, except for this one that I got was in a white paper envelope. But it's not saying that you can't do them decent in a white paper envelope, but there was no top loader. It was just in like a dragon shield, you call these?
Yeah.
Or whatever, just a regular.
Yeah, just a regular sleeve.
And wrapped in some paper. So when I got it, it's noticeably warped, you know. It won't
sit flat. Is it a foil?
It's not a foil. It's a regular card.
That's not good.
Yeah, so, I mean, through the whole process of it being shipped, you know, the card is no longer valuable. I don't like warp cards. It really particularly annoys me. So, you know, I find that Puka Trade's a big thing, and they tell and they advocate everyone to ship with the top loader. And I think, you know, if you're going to ship cards and you don't think it's valuable enough to put in a top loader, then you just should not ship the cards. So hey, I think this is just a basic key. And this is, you know, if you're doing Puka Trade or if you're doing sending cards in for a buy list or, you know, trading with friends, you know, get top loaders and then you can put them in a plain white envelope with just a stamp. And I believe you get by how many cards? Like, you're pretty good with this, Chase, and you want to get people support.
Okay, so here's the scoop on top loaders. There are different kinds of top loaders you can buy. There are single card top loaders, and then they have them with different amount of spacing so you can jam more cards in there. There are two things you want to know. One is that you should probably use the correct size top loader. I wouldn't just get one that's wide enough for 10 cards and jam one card in there. So if you're going to buy the different sizes, make sure you use the correct size. Yeah. The second thing is to put a piece of tape over the top. Like, I don't care how snug it is. So what I do is I jam it in a dragon shield, and I put that in the single card top loader. It's usually pretty snug, but I still take a little piece of tape and just cover the top so that there's a physical barrier to the card sliding out. Like, it's just a little extra security for the person. I don't know if the tape has ever prevented a card from sliding out, but I definitely know cards haven't slid out when I've shipped. I buy top loaders by the 1,000. I buy a case of them, and it works out to about 4 cents a top loader, about $40 for a box of 1,000. So it's a trivial cost. So that's, you know, that's something you want to do. Now, I actually just buy the one size top loader. And what I'll do if I have like 30, you know, like 20 cards I'm sending, I'll actually just take two top loaders and sandwich the cards in there and put tape around that. And I've never had an issue with that because I put that in a buddy bag, like a bag that's big enough for that, you know, that package. And the cards all stay together. And then I'll just put that in not a plain white envelope, but I'll put that in a padded bubble mailer. Yeah, so when you're mailing out padded bubble mailers, that's going to be something you're going to need to go to the post office for. But if you're just mailing out one card, Dragon Shield in a top loader, tape on top, plain white envelope, I don't have them get lost in the mail. I don't have to pay extra for shipping if it's just one card. If it's more than one card in a top loader, the weight gets to be such that you'll want to put an extra 20-cent stamp on there. But I can mail all that from home. I actually bought two stampers. One with my address and one that says do not bend. And I just, you know, envelope, I stamp my address on there and stamp do not bend. And that's pretty much, how I ship single cards in plain white envelopes.
Yeah. Those are really good. It's really good advice for that. The one thing I have experience with is shipping out to buy lists. And depending on the amount you have, usually what I'll do is take, you know, just some of the cheap deck boxes, the cheap plastic deck boxes that float around. I just have, big boxes of them that just kind of come in when you buy collections. And so I use those and I'll put the cards in there and I will wrap it as tight as possible. You know, like bubble wrap is ideal, but even if you don't have bubble wrap, you can sometimes just get some sort of material that isn't going to scratch the cards but will hold them snug. And you just kind of pack them into the box, and then you put some so that the goal is that they don't move at all inside of the box. And then you just tape up the box, put it inside of a bubble mailer or a padded envelope, and ship it out that way, and that'll keep them really safe. When you have more, you can kind of take the same concept and apply it to like a fat pack box. When you have a larger order to send out, that's a great way to get a bunch of cards in there, and they'll come out to the other end sorted the way that the dealer wants them, and you can have them packed where they don't move at all and will come in the same condition you sent them out.
I don't advocate using a fat pack box because fat pack boxes are worth money. When I ship to buy list, I'm shipping a $1,500 order, and if I'm picking nickels and dimes, sometime that's 5,000-6,000 cards. So what I'll do is I will take the flat rate box, the medium sized flat rate box, which is $12 to sell. A 900 count box is as long as the flat rate box. So you put the cards in the 900 count boxes, put them in order, label the boxes one of one or one of two, two of two, or if you have four boxes, that's a thing. It's going to cost you $12, but if it's, you know, if it's $450 worth of cards, like it's
well worth it. Yeah.
It's worth
you have
it.
You have a higher opinion on fat boxes than I do.
Yeah, they're worth money. I keep them. So what I do I put those boxes, they're the exact length of the flat rate box, and then I tape it to make sure it doesn't wiggle around if it's just the one box. And
I just want rid of them.
Well, yeah, well, don't sell them to me.
I got a bunch of them, and they're usually in pretty terrible condition when someone brings them from home, and I just want to get rid of them.
If it's jacked up, then just ship
them. Yeah, I mean, well, when you get them in collections, that's usually what happens is they've been floating around somebody's house, and they've been all torn up, and they're not worth anything.
Not all of us live in an area that's prone to tornadoes and shit, so
okay.
I get boxes that are in good shape because they haven't been flung outside someone's trailer.
All right.
Wow. Ryan, I don't know how you're going to come back after that one.
Am I supposed to continue or are we done with this? Like,
no, that's good. Yeah. We got in a fight. Okay. Now we gotta make up.
That was dumb. It has nothing to do with shipping. One thing I think it's important to mention on the topic of shipping though is not just when you're shipping those nickels and dimes and stuff like that, but any order that you're going to get to an amount where you feel I don't want to lose that, you should also be insuring. And I mean, we haven't mentioned that yet. But I also think that's relevant for me personally. When I ship something over $50, it gets insured, and that's just to cover your ass. I mean, you're gonna pay that little bit extra for it, but
under a dollar.
No, it's not under a dollar.
It's not like, expensive. It's a percentage.
You have to do a certified mail, and it's like $270 something.
It's a couple bucks. It's irrelevant when you're sending, you know, a $50 plus order.
Like, are you sure? Like, I feel like in the flat rate boxes, it's to go from the $50 it's already to like $400. It's a buck or two. I don't know.
I always use padded envelopes, and it's not expensive.
Okay. Yeah, the point being, it's not that much more, and you should just be doing it. I know a lot of people who just take chances with it, and yeah, you're not going to get burned, you know, 90% of the time, or even more, 99% of the time, more than likely. But that one time you do, it's going to feel really miserable.
And it's going to be $500. Like, why do that to yourself?
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm not saying you should, you know, do it on $5, $10 cards. Even when I ship on TCG, anything that's 50 or more is getting certified.
Some people I've heard 25. It really depends on the threshold, so everyone's got to find what your threshold
is. How much money are you okay with lighting on fire, I think, is, you know, it's up to you. Right. Yeah. Like, how much do you want to gamble? How much would you put in a slot machine?
Yeah, that's very true.
And how much your margins are, because that does cut into your margins. So whatever.
Yeah, like if I were to do it on every $20 card, that would be quite a bit extra. And, I mean, the numbers for me don't work out because you're moving so much more. It just doesn't make sense to insure every single one of them.
Right.
But you know,
there's a threshold there.
$50 cards. Yeah, and $50 cards, I don't ship a lot of $50 cards. I don't pick up a lot of $50 cards unless they come in collections and stuff. So you're less likely to, especially if somebody sees just a card show up in that plain white envelope at their house, they know it's not insured. The chance of them just saying it never showed up is a lot higher than on a $10 card or $5 card.
Sure.
So
what did show up is that we got a couple emails or a email.
Yeah, we got an email.
So Corbin, you got one locked and loaded, ready to go.
Absolutely.
We're big time. We get emails. We're not some trifling podcast that doesn't get responses.
Our email this week comes to us from Ethan Jones, and he says, "Hey guys, I noticed that On Moto, Pax of Return to Ravnica started at around 4 tickets and fell to 2.6 tickets. However, they started rising almost up to MSRP when they stopped being given as prize payouts. I'm currently sitting on about 30 each of every set in Theros. Am I wrong to not sell my winnings now, or should I actively buy up the Theros packs at such a low price? Regards, Ethan.
This seems like a Marcel question.
Yeah, so the prices of packs have changed considerably. Due to redemption, we had a Card Nexus on, I believe it was episode 41. He was talking about his business was big on redemption and the fees went up from $5 to redeem a set from Magic Online to paper cards to $25. And the ripple effect went all the way back to drafters where the prize packs that are now being won have been significantly lower than they have historically, ever since the redemption change. So drafters are feeling the pinch and that's where it's going on right now. The reason why the Ravnica packs went back up to 4 is because they're not being used as prize packs. When any time they're being used as prize packs, they just plummet. You can get draft sets of Theros for about $10. You can play Theros for about $10. I believe that, Theros packs are like $2, a little bit above. Same Born of the Gods and like, the Journey to Nyx are about $4. So
are you saying, will they, I guess the question is, will they go back up to about $4 a pack a year from now?
I think they'll go up, yeah, at least like about a dollar a year from now. So they'll be a safe long term. I wouldn't sell them now because they're probably as low as they're possibly going to get. Right. And once they go out of rotation, then they will eventually go back up because people will want to draft Theros at some point. It's just going to be a long sale. You're going to sit on a lot of money to make a dollar per $3 that you're sitting on for a year. So I'm not going to put a whole lot of money into buying packs just because.
Would you say that it's, what you're talking about is the opportunity cost of sinking money into something and not being able to use that money elsewhere. You know, that said, if somebody's looking for, a really stable rate of return, how comfortable can they be knowing that these 30 packs of Theros they have are going to be worth more in a year than they are now?
They could be very comfortable. Same thing was happening with Return to Ravnica packs last year. They were pretty cheap. You can get a lot of them. They were like $3, a little bit below $3. So the Theros packs are particularly cheaper. So mm-hmm. I don't know how much the redemption has changed everything because Theros is the first set that's been completely with the new redemption fees. So, and all the cards are just a lot lower than they have been historically. So really, we don't know yet, but I would definitely say they're a safe bet that they will go up from where they're at now. So it's a safe bet, but it's not a great return.
Right, right. Well, that's one of the things I think that would appeal the most about Magic Online to me if I did it is that things like that can be fairly predictable year to year. You don't necessarily have to, play the market on individual cards because you can invest in packs and there's a lot less overhead, than there is to holding them in, real life.
And the other thing about packs is the margins are very thin. So like where you buy them at, like wherever the price is at that people are selling them at, you're going to be able to sell them for a few, like 10 cents cheaper than that. Whereas cards are, they have a lot more of a spread. And the spread on the packs are much thinner, so it's safer for that reason, I believe.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to picks of the week then.
It's time for the pick of the week.
Who wants to go first? It's been a while since we've actually done these, huh?
Been a really long time, and I'm stalling because I want to look up the exact name.
I think it's been like 2 months, honestly, since we've done these. It took us a while to do. We had some interviews that we didn't do them with, and then we had episode 100 and then 101 last week. So I feel like Pick of the Week is one of your favorite segments. And
are you stalling?
It's back.
To help me out, or are you just trying to tell the most boring story possible?
Well, I was trying to help you, but now I don't care anymore because you're being a dick. So why don't you go first?
Yeah, I don't need you to cover me anymore, you asshole.
All right, why don't you go first then, Jason?
My cred is Eidolon of the Great Revel. Now, this is a card that initially I was kind of like, dude, I don't know if you want to be playing Suicide Red. During the set review, Zach Hill said, look, you just need a card that's going to fit in that mono-red devotion slot and is going to do more work than Ash Zealot. Ash Zealot being a card that has one of its abilities switched off completely because we don't have any flashback right now. So people were jamming Ash Zealot in there just because, you know, it's got the first strike, it, you know, got a good power and toughness to casting cost ratio, it gives you two red devotion, blah, blah, blah. Eidolon is going to do some work. It's probably going to deal more than four damage, you know, especially if it gets there once. So even if it deals six damage to you, if it deals four damage to them, it's worth playing. So this is a card that red players are like, I'm super stoked for this. And I was thinking it might not have a deck. But anyway, you know, it's a Pyrostatic Pillar. If you look at the foils, they were $7. Now they're sold out on Star City for $7, and they're $30 on TCG Player. So I don't know if this is Modern and Legacy demand that's making the foil price go up, or if someone just went nuts. What I do know is the fact that the foil price went nuts is probably a signal that the non-foil, which there are more copies of, has probably got upward pressure on it. This is a four of in the decks that won it. It's got cross-format playability. Look how much Vexing Devil is. I'm really bullish on this card, and I'm glad I waited for it to go down a little bit before it's rebounding. So I think $1.5 was probably the floor, and it's around $2.50 by now. So I would it's on its way up, and now's a good time to buy.
It's actually been doing very well on Moto. The price has been very solid, about $4. Right now it's at $3.71, and in perspective, A3OS is $3.96. So it's definitely
That's some fucking perspective. And Anthreos is mythic, and we're talking about a non-mythic here. So. Yeah,
it's holding this weight. It's the fifth highest rare in that set, so it's definitely holding this weight. And I was expecting, I didn't think this card was going to be as good, but demand is obviously there. So.
You know, I should have listened to my friends that play red, because they knew. You know, so you know, if you're not a red player and you have friends that are, like, you know, listen, that's why we hang out with players.
All right, so my pick of the week is going to be. Again, I like my long-term ones, but Supreme Verdict and Deathrite Shaman is going to be two of them. Supreme Verdict is about one tick, and Deathrite's about three, even though it was about $2.50, $2 a couple weeks ago. Wish I could have made it a peak of week then. But I think long-term Legacy and Vintage may be very unlikely, but possibly. But these formats are going to see a lot more demand because of Vintage Masters. People are going to play it. These cards are not going to be reprinted again. I don't think so. Abrupt Decay is a little high right now. I expect it to probably drop by the time rotation or maybe there, but definitely these cards are going to be at least double, triple over time. So these are good long-term stacks. I don't mind this, putting my money in here, because if you wait a couple of years, you'll probably see triple. So
Finance 101 question, Marcel, is rotation as much of a thing on Moto? Could we expect Deathrite Shaman to fall at rotation, or do you think, you know, the 250 it hit was probably going to be the absolute floor?
I think that's probably the floor. It's probably not going to see much of a rotation hit. And as we've seen with the last rotation on Moto, that a lot of the internal playable cards didn't really dip after rotation. They dipped before rotation. So, like, probably 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks before the end of rotation was when they hit the floor.
So you're confident buying in right now?
I
this
wouldn't
far
have a problem.
Before rotation with death, right? Okay.
Yeah, I said $3. I could see it becoming a $10 card easily over time.
So what do you guys think about, you know, I know how we all feel about Deathrite Shaman as a long-term play in paper, but what about Supreme Verdict? It's pretty much been going down since Journey to Nyx came out. It's headed towards an all-time low. That said, it's probably the best Wrath of God ever printed. Is it time, like, do you get into these soon? Do you wait until rotation to get into them? I think we probably all agree it's a good long-term hold.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you're going to have some time before it goes to the bottom, but if you start trading into them now in paper, I don't think you're doing bad. It may be over time, but I think these are definitely cards to pick up because people are moving them out because of standard. They're not playing them as much, but it's still a player in standard, so the demand's not just dropping out completely. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know exactly when the window. I'd rather just hedge my bets and pick some up now and pick some up later and just, like, pick them up because I know this car is going to be worth more.
So if you haven't listened to all 102 episodes, something we've said, you know, quite a bit is if you're the best ever at what you do, you're probably the one card to go after until they print something better. Supreme Verdict is, for all intents and purposes, in most situations, the best Wrath due to its uncounterability. It's a little tougher to play than a double white Wrath with no blue in it, but it's uncounterable. So the fact that it's that strong means that's the Wrath I'm targeting right now. And I I think we all agree it's too cheap.
Okay. I'll go next. I'm going to come in with a little different pick, as it's not something I don't think you should pick up at this point, and that's Corsair Crucifix. You know, when Born of the Gods came out, we talked about this on the cast, and we liked it. It was like $250, I think, pre-ordering. And we were all like, you know, this has the potential to be a $4 or $5 card. It's good in a lot of stuff. It's good value. It may not get their chapter rotation. Well, we were all, you know, pretty silly, and we were right, but we weren't quite right enough. It did go up, and it hit 5 or 6, and I was like, oh yeah, feeling good about that. Then it just took over the block Pro Tour, and since then has climbed up to, as of today, $17. An all-time high. You know, I know we talked a lot about Boros Reckoner last year and it hitting 30 for a weekend because, you know, it took over a Pro Tour. Corsair Crucifix, I think, is probably going to stay more playable into Standard next year than maybe Reckoner did, just because Reckoner required, like, the field to interact on some basic level for it to be good, whereas Corsair just requires you to play it and play lands. Which is something, you know, obviously everybody does. So I do think it's going to hold value, but I think that 17 is very, very near the ceiling. Like, there's no way this card holds $20, you know, 12 months from now. You know, I think it may spike a little higher with rotation, but I think you definitely need to be on the lookout for these if you have these to get rid of them. Or at the very least, don't go buying into these at 17 unless you absolutely need them.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to drop a whole lot. I think just because it is in the third set.
It's in the second set.
Oh, it's the second set. Oh, sorry. Oops. There you go. Shut up, Marcel.
I mean, like you said, the second set is still just not going to be opened a ton. But, yeah, I mean, and it's actually going to be opened less than Boros Reckoner was. But I still don't think there's any way a rare can hold $20.
But, I mean, a lot of people were poo-pooing on Born of the Gods, so did people open less of it? Because I remember a lot of people were just not trying to open packs or not trying to draft it.
I mean, people didn't love it, but, like, it's not Dragon's Mage either. Like, this thing has a bunch of lands in it. It's got Planeswalkers that people like. You know, it has cards, unlike Dragon's Mage, which just actually had nothing.
To be fair, though, I mean, Snapcaster Mage held, and that was just a creature. Like, this card.
Let me know when Corsair is a 4-of in Legacy.
I think
I understand, but if it's getting played in Modern, that's not a bad equivalent.
I can see it be a 12. I don't think it's going to drop below 10.
Yeah, I'm not saying you should go buy into the card by any means. I'm not trying to, I'm just playing devil's advocate and saying there is a chance that this card does actually hold that value.
Well, like I said, I think it is probably a 10 to 12, maybe $15 card over the next 12 months, but it's certainly not going to be 20 plus. There's no way.
That's crazy for a non-mythic.
Yeah, and there's no way a year from now, as people start getting ready for, you know, rotation of 2015, that it's going to be anywhere near this price. Like, it's not deriving as much of its value from eternal playability of something like Snapcaster.
That's fair. That's a good evaluation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's my pick. I think it may go a little higher, but I'm looking to move mine.
Yeah, I mean, leave the last 10% for somebody else. It's always our rule.
All right, Ryan, what do you got this week?
Well, I think Marcel already kind of touched on Vintage Masters, which we're clearly going to be getting to here in a moment. But with the release of that, I think you're going to see a lot of people, and maybe it's just my area and a couple of people I've talked to, but it seems like there's a lot more people kind of getting hyped about the idea of Vintage in general. And before, proxy Vintage tournaments were always a thing. But that was really all you had, unless, you know, you had the occasional bigger tournament where you had to have a big draw in order to make anything for a store, so they just didn't run very many Vintage tournaments. However, if interest picks up in Vintage, I think one thing to look for are these cards that have stagnated for so long just because the interest hasn't been there. Cards like Fast Bond that are...
Right.
And did Ryan die for anyone else?
Yes, he did.
Oh, God, I thought it was just me. Good.
God, he actually was like... He had a point. He sounded coherent. It was going to be good.
He was really contributing.
I know.
I was just thinking, I was like, this is a pretty good episode. We even got Ryan talking some good stuff here. And then, nope.
Not going to happen.
So my pick of this week kind of was in line with what Marcel was talking about with Vintage Masters.
I think another part of, you know, these Eternal formats, especially Vintage, that people forget about are these little outlying cards. And in Vintage's case, it's really cards on the restricted list that are just banned from everywhere else. Don't really see a ton of play even in Vintage just because there's not a lot of Vintage players. But with Vintage Masters rising, I think the interest level, and it seems like the interest level in my local area and a couple of other areas as well that I've heard about, are picking up, and there's more people wanting to try and run some proxy tournaments and stuff like that. And the things you're not going to be proxying in these Vintage tournaments are your, you know, cards like Fastbond, these $5 cards that have just been stagnant for years. I mean, some of them, I don't know how long Fastbond's been that amount, but ever since I remember, like, starting to deal with Magic cards and, like, a finance level at all. And these cards are definitely ready for a boost if Vintage itself takes up in any popularity. And clearly, you know, you're not going to be able to run widespread Vintage tournaments in real life. That's not going to happen. There's not enough power for everybody. But there are plenty of stores trying to accommodate for their local players. And if that does happen and it does kind of pick up, I don't expect to be modern by any means, but I can certainly see, you know, these prices doubling from $5 to $10 or $5 to $15. We see cards like Wheel of Fortune that went up after a little while, and some of them can have EDH boosts as well, but, I mean, Fastbond in particular clearly can't because it's banned.
Now, do you expect to see something like we saw with Modern Masters, which is where those $5 cards completely tanked? Like, Modern Masters pulled the rug out from under Stone Hero Giant and Divinity of Pride and Vigor and cards like that. Was it Vigor in the set? I don't know. Anyway.
No, it wasn't. Vigor's $20 now.
So, what was the card I'm thinking of? Because we saw Modern Masters completely pull the rug out from underneath cards like Divinity of Pride and Stonehewer Giant and, like, those solid $5 cards we used to like to trade for. So do you not see that happening now with Modern Masters? Or Vintage Masters, I mean?
Well, I think the Vintage Masters being only an online release doesn't affect the real-world cards. And that's what I'm talking about more. Is like, I think Vintage Masters, because there's a lot of people playing on Modo and are going to have their first chance to play with Power and their first chance to get into Vintage, they're going to have an interest in it. And local areas are trying to accommodate for that by letting, you know, you play Vintage without obviously being able to build a full Vintage deck. That's not realistic for most areas. But there's a lot of people I've heard 20 proxy and things like that. And that usually allows you to put together a reasonable deck without having to buy the Power or any of the really expensive cards. And that's where you have these cards like Fastbond and stuff like that. And I mean, it's the same kind of boost we did see from Vintage or from Modern Masters. But I don't think you're going to see any of the casual, like, because it's strictly online and you're not actually printing any physical cards, I don't think it has anything to do with the casual market at all.
Marcel, how much do you like Vintage Masters after seeing it?
Vintage Masters, the format where someone has posted $700 for a Black Lotus.
Cheaper than paper.
Not a foil Black Lotus. A super special Black Lotus for $700. They could eat a dick and die. That's what they can do. But, you know, this is probably just, you know, people are testing the waters and they're trying to figure out, and I think this is insane.
So wait, did someone listed one or someone agreed to buy one for $700?
Oh, someone listed one, I guess. But right now you can play Legacy and Vintage events. The packs are not actually in the store. You can play those events for 4 tickets, and then those are the prizes, the Vintage Masters. So people are playing those events, they're 2-man events, and then just basically busted open the packs, and someone busted open a Black Lotus, and they posted in a classified $700. Someone did a tweet on there, and they showed it, and so I heard mocks for $250.
I mean, you can ask for that all you want. The second some asshole pays that, and then everyone's like, "Well, I guess that's reasonable," then you can be upset.
Right.
But like,
if it's just
somebody like hoping and wishing, that's probably fine. Like, they can look like the jackass.
It's people
until someone posts
water.
One for 100 tickets.
Yeah, it's people testing the water. Packs are going to be open like at a rate that people don't quite get. Like this is going to be an insanely fun format to play. A lot of people want to get into this.
Yeah,
so what you're saying is there's going to be a lot of packs opened, and the prices are going to come way down.
I think, though, with them having a new rarity for it, it certainly, like, I don't think it's going to take as big of a dip as it would if it was just, like, a mythic. But I don't know that 700 is correct. Granted, I mean, it depends on how the demand is for – it depends on if Vintage itself picks up or if it's just this format. Because, I mean, if you don't have the constructed playability behind it, like if nobody really cares about playing actual Vintage and they just want to play because they think they can get mocks and stuff like that in this draft format, then all those prices will fall flat.
I would say that's what I expect to happen because, like, you know, even if a lot of people get into the format now and it kind of goes good for a while, well, in a year, it's still vintage and nobody will have those cards again. Like, they're still really expensive cards that are vintage only playable. So I think it's still going to be a niche format.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think people are definitely going to jump in and get into the format with this. And it's not going to be as much as, say, Modern Masters did for Modern. Because, again, it is very expensive to get all the other cards to make this, you know, your decks what it is. But
right.
People are going to play this. I mean, this is going to be just like people are going to play this because they want to play the lottery. And you can play a draft. And eventually people are just going to keep going and going and cycling in. So, I mean, prices are going to drop on a lot of the cards. And people are going to want to pick up power because anyone that's going to want to play, they're thinking long term, they're going to play Magic Online. This is going to probably be the cheapest that you're going to be able to pick up your power, and you might as well do it now at this point. And I think quite a few people are going to do that. There's going to be more people doing that than you would think that will be. And prices aren't going to sustain because, yes, this is a special mythic, but at $700 or even $100, I mean, I could see $80 to $100 Moxes and maybe $150 Black Lotus, but that's pretty insane as it is. Otherwise, people are just going to open up packs. And if you're going to have Vintage Masters as the prize payout for these two-mans, internal two-mans, and it's going to go until basically the next set comes out. Like, there's going to be a lot of packs open, and people are going to be playing a lot of Legacy. It's going to be – you actually will see a lot more Legacy events fire. You'll see Vintage events fire. There's going to be a big demand, but that means a lot of packs are going to be opened. So you're going to see prices continue to fall. So, I really don't know what to call and what to call on these numbers. Because I'm trying to buy in. Like, you know, I've been waiting. I sold a lot of my cards as soon as I found out that the duels were reprinted. So I got a lot of tickets saved, and I'm ready to, you know, get in on my vintage stuff. So I'm trying to find the right price, the right thing to go. But I definitely don't think that these prices are going to hold. And I think that the actual amount of people and the supply is going to be higher than people anticipate. Because the biggest thing about power is you only need one of. And that completely changes. Yes, these are going to be twice as rare as a mythic, but then the demand is going to be only a quarter of the normal demand of a mythic that's a playable for a playset. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic. I just don't know how to call it.
So here's my question. Is there price support for, say, vintage events? Like, I know, you know, daily events and premier events are standard or block and modern, and I don't know. I think there's probably some legacy maybe. Is there going to be anything like that for vintage, or is it still just going to be, you know, this – get an 8-man pod and fire it off sort of format?
No, there are going to be daily events for vintage and legacy. There's going to be more of those. They announced a complete prize structure that they're going to be doing for that. And Worth actually was talking about that the way that they balanced it out, that they're giving more packs to people that are playing limited events right now, and that eventually there will be more packs for the constructed events. I'm not exactly sure how that is, but they're definitely going to be continuing to support the constructed events, and you're going to see people play it just because when you have the opportunity to make more money off these games, you know, there's going to be people that are going to grind, and grinders are going to want to do that. If you got Vintage Masters as prize packs, people are going to grind out a lot of two-mans. It's going to be the thing to do.
So. Okay. Yeah, I think it helps.
Terrible EV, like, don't you have to have a 70% or like a 90% win rate to do better than break even?
Wouldn't you just need a 50% win rate?
I know the price payout for most formats is terrible. I don't know about Vintage Masters.
Well, yeah, for Vintage Masters, it's pretty insane. Like, but that's I think that Arthur Halibut was talking about that as the price of packs when they were dropping down to like $2 a pack. But if they're like maintaining a value of $4, is better. Here, the Vintage Masters packs are $7, but if you're cracking them open and, you know, power as expensive as they are.
Yeah, if you can get a foil Black Lotus in there.
Yeah, people are going to just – it's lottery. Like, we're underestimating the lottery aspect in people and that drive and that desire to gamble.
I mean, let's be real. Most gamers are gambling addicts at heart, so.
So I'll bet you that they are.
You already see pros right now, like William Jensen and Tom Martell are talking about the packs they open. No one got any, you know, power, but they're, you know, this thing. Like, I'm going to see a lot of pro players are going to just take this in full health.
So I have a really noob Moto question.
Yeah.
Because talking about two-mans. I was under the impression that, like, and I don't know what it actually costs to enter. I say it costs, like, one tick to enter, and you get two tickets if you win and zero if you lose. Is that how it works or no?
No, there are two tickets to enter, and you get a pack if you win in a 2-man.
Oh, so that's like, well, the packs are like $3 each, right?
Oh, they're retail $4, but depending, right. Usually they're like three to four depending. Or they
so wouldn't you only need like a 50% win rate to make money in 2-mans?
Yes.
Is that how it works?
It's, okay. It's a little bit higher than 50% because you are never getting 4 out of a pack. Like it rarely ever.
Well, isn't a ticket only one?
Goes so over $2. The retail.
It's $2 to enter it, right? So.
Right. But you're going to win like 3.7 or 3.6. So.
Oh, I understand. Okay. I understand what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. So eventually.
Okay. So, but yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's like a 60% win rate or something. Sure.
Yeah. Like if you have a 60%, you can technically grind it out, but you're not doing it from 2-mans. Like most of your grinding comes from dailies because if you go 3-1.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. That's,
I was
most
curious.
People grinding aren't grinding daily or aren't grinding a ton of 8-mans.
Right. Okay. I'm with you.
So you're done with your understanding of Magic Online? Are you ready to go back to the Dark Age?
Yeah. I'm not going to play Magic Online now, but I learned something. So that was cool.
All right, well, teach me about this conspiracy shit that you're talking about.
Well, okay, I did one conspiracy draft, and
so you're a format expert now.
Oh, absolutely. I drafted all the votes with Brago's representative, and I had a lot of voting cards, and that was fun. I enjoyed having more votes than the rest of the table put together, and it was kind of fun to play. And now I never want to do it again. Like. The act of drafting conspiracy, the actual drafting of the cards and all the cool draft matters cards, I think that is all insanely awesome. I'm not a huge fan of the gameplay because it's a 4-player game. And it's like, so it kind of like takes a lot of things that might traditionally be good and limited, like 2-drops, you know, like, you know, an aggro deck works great on 101, but it's a lot less powerful in a multiplayer format. So I don't love the plain format of it, but overall I would have to say I give Conspiracy a big like B+ on the release because people were very excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I had a unique situation where we just bought a box and played 4 people here, and we decided we hated the idea of a free-for-all format. That's part of the reason I didn't go to a pre-release for it, because I didn't want to end up in a pod with 3 people who knew who I was and just destroy me in the pod right away, because 3v1, like, it doesn't matter how good you are, you're probably still going to lose that game. And so I just played with friends, and we decided to play 2HG with it, and that turned out to be a ton of fun.
That
we
seems way better. Until
after the fact, and it was kind of cool because the voting mechanic just balances itself in the sense that, you know, it really comes down to who has more of those extra votes to make the entire team play work behind it. And parlay is interesting. Like, it made the game a lot more fun. At that point, you're not trying to split objectives. No one's being an asshole to each other. And we just switched up partners a couple of times and played like that. I mean, the format's supposed to be fun. It's nothing competitive. So just play however you want.
Well, and that was, like I said, the issue. When I got together with a group and we just played free for all and there were no prizes on the line, it was, I mean, I enjoyed it. The issue is, like all the stores, and my store's running an event. I'm running the event for it next week, and we had to try to figure out how we're going to do prize support for it. And some people say, hey, you know, if you knock someone else out, you get a pack. And I don't really like that because it encourages you to not, like, attack somebody unless you're going to kill them. Because you don't want to be the person who puts them at 1 and lets the next person kill them. So it's just, it's kind of weird when you try to introduce prizes to it. But I would say, like, you know, for what it set out to accomplish, which was be fun to draft and provide a unique gameplay experience, it's awesome.
Yep.
Jason, Marcel, you guys do anything with it?
Nope.
Not on Moto. I imagine Marcel didn't touch it. There is a number of cards that are going to be in Vintage Masters from the set, though.
Yeah, there's like, I think, 12 or 15 that are going to be in there. And they're not going to be that exciting. Maybe Doug Faden for...
Doug Faden's cool.
Or, I mean, Ryan Bouchard.
I'm supposed to be caring about that card.
So what do we think about Conspiracy financially? You know, there's a lot of legacy reprints in them from some old cards. You know, do we think sealed boxes of this are the way to go? Do we think the singles are going to bottom out and they'll be good to pick up? Or what are your guys' thoughts?
All of yes. Every part of yes on all of those questions.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. I think the cards are way too cheap right now. Like, buy lists on, like, the Explorations and Misdirections are, like, 5 to 10.
Yeah.
Which is terrible. And I get it, they're reprints. However, there's a reason those cards initially were 30 to 40 a piece. Like, they will be back there.
Well, I mean, that's the question, though. It's like, Exploration, for instance, was 30 or 40 because it's a really old card. Like, you know, it's, that is a legacy set, like, just in the sense that,
but
you know, it's very old.
Right, but the people who want it because it's very old and, like, want the original version, it's going to stay worth money for that reason. And then they give it new art. Anytime they give stuff new art, the prices aren't nearly as affected. Once I saw that all the reprints were getting new art, like, the reprints in the set don't scare me. I see no reason.
Well, I mean,
for
do you think that they're, do you think that they're gonna, I mean, do you think that, vintage, or that, that Conspiracy Exploration is gonna be $30 2 years from now?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
New art, again, like, you see what happens to the playable cards when they don't give them the same art. Like, it's a much quicker climb back up.
Okay.
Because you're not killing the old price, because some people are gonna like the old art. And some people are going to like the new art. And some people are going to want the foil version that they couldn't get before. And some people want the non-foil version of Stifle they couldn't get before.
Right.
Like,
okay. I would say that in terms of Conspiracy financially, I'm less excited about the singles. Like, I don't know if I'm as bullish on them as Ryan. I think they're probably all going to be good pickups after they kind of bottom out. But I'm a big fan of sealed boxes once they bottom out. Because this is one of those things, and I've made the comparison to Unhinged and Unglued, where the box is not only going to hold value, derived from the singles in it, you know, like an old box of like Ravnica, Ravnica is not the best example, but like Time Spiral was expensive because Tarmogoyf, you know, people wanted their chance at a Tarmogoyf and that was worth money. So the box was worth money. I think Conspiracy is, got some of that going for it, but it's more like an Unhinged Unglued where the drafting experience, carries a lot of intrinsic value because, you know, in 5 years, people aren't going to want to go buy a pack of Conspiracy. They're going to want to go buy 24 packs of Conspiracy and draft it with their friends. And I think that gives a lot of value to the sealed product. So that's where I'm looking at in the long term of this.
That's a good way to look at it. You know, that is honestly a great way to look at it. So yeah, sealed boxes aren't that bad, I think, in the long term. And I mean, I'm not going to pick any, but I can't wait to play some. I'm going to play some in Portland, and I know that people are excited to bust those out at events. So you're going to see people doing that, you know, like if you got to get together people, hey, let's bust open a Conspiracy box. So that seems to be like a thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a testament. That format really is a lot of fun. There's some very interesting and unique things that Conspiracy allow you to do. Like it shapes the game itself just from the draft,
yeah,
which is very cool.
It's awesome.
No, this is awesome. Original art.
Yes. Go That's on. Bad. Tell me more.
So original art. If you like your original art, like I do, I'm a big fan of the original art. I can't stand the new stuff for the most part. There is some stuff that's new that's pretty good, but still I'm an original art fan first and old border first. That's me. But if you go to Brainstorm Brewery, and you'll check it out. We have a Vintage Masters art swap. So you can basically download the art files, put it in. It tells you how to install them on your computer. It's a real simple process. And you can update it and get all the original art on your Moto. So when you play Vintage Masters, you don't have to look at these ugly mocks that are some new rendition of what the classics are. So check it out. I play with it all the time. I love it. There's also an old border swap, so you can change the modern border to an older border. It's a little weirder, especially when you get to like the black cards. It's harder to read the text name, but it looks good. So it depends if you want that. I definitely say the art swap is for most people. You should get the old art. It's a better way to experience it, especially when you're playing Vintage Masters. But
Where can people find that, Marcel?
It's on brainstormbrewery.com, and you'll look up Vintage Masters art swap, original art swap. And it'll be, I guess I'll make a sticky for like the first 2 weeks or something, or first week. So it'll be on there. If you just go to the website, you'll see it there.
Sweet.
And check that out. And then we have another thing. There's going to be a prize. We got a contest going on. We're partnering up with a Heavy Meta. They had a partnership with Kraken Rum. If you heard their cast, they're big Kraken fans. And I guess they were able to get in contact with some representatives from Kraken Rum, and they were game to them making fan-created art playmats. And, you know, they linked up with us and said, you know, let's have people build play mats for, you know, either of our casts or both of our casts together. So if you use our logo or use their logo and crack and rum, put it together. We're going to have a contest where the top play mats, we're going to get them printed through ink play mats. We're going to do something with them. And so you guys have the opportunity to create some cool play mats and could be something that will represent Brainstorm Brewery or Heavy Meta if you're a fan of that cast as well. Check it out. I mean, make some play mats, send it in, you know, send it to brainstormbrew@gmail.com. I believe you have a couple weeks or about a month or so. So get that in. Yeah, it could be the next play mat that we have out there. So there's definitely prizes. We haven't figured it out, but you know, the prize support is going to be awesome. So you can't go wrong with that. So yeah, send that in.
All right, guys. Well, that's everything we had on the slate for this week.
Oh, no, not Corbin. Come on, somebody else close the episode out.
Wow. Go, Jason.
Go, Jason. Close it, really. Like, just me telling you that even if I do nothing, it's still better than having you do it.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.